Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators. And we've been working for, the last 25, 30 years. We've worked for just about every major publisher. Together, we've got somewhere around 100 books published between us. And we've all taught illustration at the university. There's a creak. Someone's got a creak in their chair, and it totally threw me off. I'm like,
Is there a creak? I don't hear the creak.
It must be
one of you.
I hear so.
I think that was my cat, actually, came in. All right. So we've taught at the university level. Each week, we're going to do a different podcast on a different topic, and you're going to learn a bunch of cool stuff, or at least hear us talk about creaky chairs.
All right. So today, it's my topic, and what I want to talk about was cultivating creativity. So what can you do to be more creative, or to make sure creativity is like there when you need it? Doing illustration, doing any sort of artistic endeavor requires you to be a person who thinks creatively, who thinks outside the box, who looks at interesting problems or even ordinary problems, but comes up with unique ways to solve them. And that's pretty much every illustration job that I've taken on has been a problem that needed to be solved in an interesting way. And so I thought we'd go into it and talk about, like, what do you guys do to make sure you're staying creative? You're staying, like, creatively sharp. One thing I wanted to talk about first, and then I'll go into asking you guys specific things that you do. But this is an idea that was come up with that Mitchell Resnick came up with. Well, I don't know if he came up with it, but I got it from him in an article that he shared on Medium. And he talks about the creative cycle. Okay, so the creative cycle, specifically he's talking for children, but I think it applies to adults as well. And what the creative, I take that back. It's not a cycle. It could be a cycle. He calls it a spiral because it never loops back into itself. It always spirals into new and different things, right? Version of the thing. So the first step is in this creative spiral is imagining. And imagining leads to creating, and creating leads to playing, and playing leads to sharing. Sharing leads to reflection, and reflection leads to imagining something new, and the spiral starts again. So you imagine, you create, you play, you share, and you reflect. And the thing that he's talking about, I think, is specifically is with, you know, things like a lot of children's toys can involve the building aspect to it. So specifically Lego is the one that I have in mind. But even if you just had Barbie dolls and like G.I. Joes, you would put them together and create something with them, whether it's a story, whether it's an event, or whether it's, you know, some sort of, you might build like we used to build like war landscapes for the G.I. Joes. You know, we'd dig trenches and we'd like put in little like miniature barbed wire and fences and things like that. So you'd have the imagine level, then the creation level. So if it is Lego, you're building something. And then once you've built the thing, you play with it. And then if you have people to share it with, you share those things that you've played with. Like, hey, look at this that I've made. Let's share it. Let's work on it together. And then once that's done, take time to reflect on it. And through that reflection, you think, oh, how could that have gone better? How could I have, I guess a kid never quite thinks, how could that have gone better? Maybe they do. I don't know. But that's more of adult thinking. But the reflection is like, I really enjoyed this. I want to do more of that. Or I could do it. Or this was boring. What if I changed it this way to make it better? They start imagining, and then the play repeats itself. And that's what I would do as a kid, like with Lego, for sure. I remember one problem I had to solve as a kid was I had all these Legos and I had no Batman Legos because they hadn't come out with, they hadn't licensed Batman for Lego yet. And they had city Lego, they had pirate Lego, they had space Lego, but I wanted Batman Lego. So I sat down and turned my black spaceman into Batman, and I made little like paper ears, bat ears that I taped to it, and I made a little paper like bat symbol and taped that to the front.
Awesome.
And I made a Two-Face character and a couple other like bat characters, and then I made a Batmobile and I made the Batcave and all that stuff out of Lego, and so now I had like my Batman play set. That was just a way as a kid where I learned creative problem solving. And the thing I want to do is apply that to us as adults. So here we are, us three are professionals, but you know, perhaps if you're listening to this, maybe you're not professional, maybe you're pro-am, maybe you're amateur, maybe you just do illustration for like as a way to wind down at the end of the night. But still, you want to be looking at ways to think creatively, to be more creative, because it affects every aspect of your life, whether it's, you know, problem solving with kids, problem solving with coworkers, problem solving with, you know, just life in general, things that you face there. So let me ask you is this, how would this creative spiral work with adults? So the first step is imagine. How does imagining lead to creating? How do you go?
I have an example that I'd love to share.
Let's hear it, Will.
Well, so I really believe that if you're going to be successful as a creative artist, mm-hmm. you have to incorporate creativity into your whole life. Mm-hmm. I don't think it just starts when you look at a piece of paper and sit down to draw. I think you use creativity to solve lots of problems in your life. So for instance, I had a teacher who actually explained this one time when I was in school, when I was in college, who said, you guys are artists. And this was one of the best talks I ever got. All of you guys are artists. That means you're different than most everyone else. You're trying to become a professional artist. So you should look at the world differently, and you should look at problems differently than most people. Most people in the world are content to let other people solve their problems, to look for a solution. And if the solution isn't out there, like you go to the store to buy something to solve a need or a problem that you have, right? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't exist, oh, well, you can't solve that problem. But he said, you guys need to be able to make an item, make something that will solve your problem. So you guys have seen like all the redneck solutions on Google, right? Like for like fixing things, right? Like the rope that you pull back and forth between in your car to get the windshield wipers to work when they're broken and stuff. You know, they're tied onto the windshield wipers, you know, just stupid stuff like that.
Yeah. But lots of baleen wire and duct tape.
Right. But those are creative solutions, and they shouldn't, even though they're ghetto, they shouldn't be overlooked as you solve the problem. So he was kind of basically trying to explain that to us. And I remember there's a lot of things that I have created since just hearing that talk. Like I've looked at the world differently. Like, oh yeah, if I need something, I'll make it. And one thing that I made was before GoPro ever came out, you know, me and my family, we were always into snowboarding, and I would take my boys up and we'd go snowboarding for the day. And I remember thinking, I want to get camera shots from the board, from, you know, low angle, where I would attach my camera down on the board because it would look really cool. Mm-hmm. And I had a digital camera, one of the first digital cameras that came out, but I didn't want it to get all wet with snow and slush and everything. So I took a goggle case, a clear plastic goggle case, that my racquetball goggles came in, and I cut it and I modified it and I heated it up so I could bend it, and I ended up making that clear plastic case that GoPro kind of uses. I mean, it didn't look anything like theirs. It was ugly.
Yeah, right.
But it served the same purpose.
GoPro thing. Oh, but it worked like a charm. I bought Velcro stickers to stick on the case and put a sticker on my snowboard, and I could just stick it on with Velcro, and it worked like a charm. And then like 2 years later, GoPro came out and they made, you know, millions and millions and then billions of dollars. And I was like, I could have done that. You're looking at the guy who could have been the creator of GoPro. But,
no, I think that's true. I think that's true to a lot of an extent. I mean, you can't just be creative all of a sudden for 1 hour in the evening. It's gonna show up all over the place. You know, it's kind of funny that you say that, because I've never really tied that in to how I think about illustration. But there's a couple of examples I remember as being a kid. I remember one thing in particular. Went to summer camp one year, and we had this creative hat. Each day of the week was a different day of the week, you know, the patriotic day and whatnot. And one of them was creative hat day. And I was like, I don't have any creative hats or anything, you know, that's even remotely interesting. And I thought everybody was going to be making their hats. And so show up day of creative hat day, and everybody just bought, like, there's a big sombrero and, like, you know, some funny off the shelf hats that people had. Mm-hmm. But I had built, because I didn't know that people wouldn't be making it, I had a fully working train set that I had made into a hat, that it had a drivable train and everything plugged in. And it was so much fun. But it was just so different as I was standing there in the row of people competing in creative hat day. I was like, okay. I mean, if you took the picture, it would definitely, this one kid thinks a little bit differently than the rest of this group.
But I did kids well. Is not like the other.
For better or for worse. I also remember at Art Center doing a project where it was a semester long industrial design project, and it had to do with representing LA, and you had to, all different majors were in there. And so I'm an illustrator, and so I'm doing stuff around LA and landscape paintings and bringing in a lot of that glitz that's so funny about LA. If you haven't lived in Los Angeles, it's a very strange place if you're there for enough time. And, you know, being in the freeway. And so I compiled just my whole experience of being in LA, both the art side of it, but then also all the other side of it. And by the end of it, I had a book that was a remote control drivable book. And so I could drive it into the critique, the final critique. And it was just the epitome of LA. It was all furry and kind of glam, had sequins all over, but you could actually drive it. It was remote control. Uh-huh. And so, you know, that stuff plays out all over the place outside of illustration.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So I like that it's seeping into other aspects of your life. Like you're not just being creative on the page, but creativity is happening elsewhere. So what is it that you guys do that help you to think, I guess, think outside the box? Is it that, number one, you're going to solve your own problems? Is that like, would that be like principle one? Like,
yeah, I think for me, for sure, you have to give yourself permission. Like a lot of people that I've bumped into or talked to, even family members are like, what made you think you could just do this? Or what made you think you could just do that? You know? Mm-hmm. And I think giving yourself permission and even like, I mean that, like in a movie, there's what do they call it? The turn or something, where something happens in the character's life that is, makes them think differently.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. The call to adventure,
but basically, the call to adventure, maybe that's it.
Call to action.
But basically when
call to action.
Yeah. When my teacher said that, when he basically gave me permission to create stuff, and he was like, oh, so you can just solve problems. You know, I mean, like that was huge. That was a huge turning point in my life. Yeah. And I have a lot of examples of where I have made modified things or made new tools or things that I've needed to solve, you know, to fix things and in creative ways. And that, I think that really does come right into your art. So yeah, for me, I think the first thing is really giving yourself permission
Well, there's okay, another so, there's another yeah. unsaid ingredient there, though, that I think should be mentioned. And I don't know if I'm mentioning it out of place because I don't know really where Jake's going to go for the rest of this. But
well, Jake didn't really plan well for this. He doesn't have a list. So we can go okay. wherever we want to go with this.
Okay, good. One of the key components that I think that goes along with what Will's saying, the idea of what he's saying is true, that just knowing that you can do something and build something or whatever that doesn't exist, that's a mm-hmm. certain point. But the other thing that goes with that hand in hand is some kind of limiter. And I use limiters as the main driving force of creative thought. In those areas like Will's talking about where it's not an illustration, the limiter might be time, it might be money, or it's just the fact mm-hmm. that something doesn't exist. And so there's a limit on what you can do. And so that's when I was remodeling, I did all kinds of creative solutions because I didn't have the money to hire somebody to do it correctly. I didn't have the gear. Mm-hmm. And I just had to, necessity being the mother of invention. In illustration, I do that a lot where I'll set an arbitrary limiter on a project and it creates it you can't help but end up somewhere different. Like, for example, I did that whole series where I was trying to do paintings that had very limited value. And I mean, I'm a value based, I think in value. I mean, I'm a more of a painter than a drawer. And so I'm basically taking away my main strength, which is value. And what kind of images am I left with when there's a low value image? And I do that all the time. The one piece I did for Inktober this month, I set the most bizarre set of limiters on this piece. You guys will see this piece eventually, Jake and Will. But I just set up all these limiters and then I thought to myself, can I pull this off with these limiters in place? And it was so extreme that you can't help but go somewhere cool with it.
That's cool. I agree with that. Like I call it,
and
go ahead, Will. I'll just stop no, and go thought ahead. Right in go the ahead. Middle. I'm just kidding.
Just go. So I think there's kidding. A delay because you had that really dumb look on your face still uh-huh. when I started talking. So it looked like you weren't thinking of anything.
Oh, okay. Quit looking at the video. No, I was just going to say, I don't call them limiters. I call them constraints, but it's the same thing. Like,
yeah.
That's one of the things that I always come back to. It's like, what are the constraints I'm going to put around myself, either deliberately or looking at what are my constraints that I haven't done, but are just there inherently. And how can I work around those things or use them to do it? And I think, going back to Inktober, I think that's why there is an appeal to Inktober, is because that constraint is there's so much that can be done with ink, but it is way more constrained than, a palette of paints or a iPad full of, of digital colors. And it's really cool to see what people end up doing with just black and white.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be what people struggle with Slovember. If you guys haven't heard of Slovember, you're going to definitely want to check that out. No, wow. But really, there's nothing harder than a blue sky project that has no limits, a big mm-hmm. block of time. So you're not constrained with time. You're not constrained with subject matter. You're not constrained with media. So you almost you have to put these mm-hmm. constraints on, or limiters, or what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm wondering what kind of creativity Lee's going to use with, lubricating that chair. So
it's not my chair. Is it squeaking? Okay, is there a squeak? Here, I'm going to go back and forth, try to get it to squeak. There's no squeak.
I don't hear it now, but I have heard it. So how about we don't worry about it?
I keep hearing it.
Just don't let it distract you, Will.
It's not me, Will. It's actually, it's like a horror film. It's coming from inside your house.
Okay. Next thing I want to throw out there so we've talked about have a mindset where you're going to solve your own problems. Number two, right. Exist in a space where there are limitations or constraints. And number three, I would say this is something I think is essential to creativity, and that is play or messing around. And this is one of those things where I feel so guilty about it from time to time, because there's no direct like outcome associated with what I'm doing. But every time I do it, I feel maybe not even in that moment, I don't feel creative, but I always feel like it affects creativity down the line somewhere. And so by playing, I mean, like, I actually have right here, this is in front of me. I don't know if you can hear that. This is a Lego set that I haven't opened yet. I've been saving it as my treat for after Inktober's over. I'm going to build a Lego set. which today we're recording this the day after Inktober. So this is going to get built this weekend for sure. But the thing I love about Lego, there's no secret here that it's the greatest toy and it's been a huge like impact in my life, is that there are those things already in it. There's a problem to be solved. You have a mess of blocks and they need to be put together into something. You have limitations. With Lego, you're really at the mercy of the pieces that you have available to you. And if you ever see, like, you know, there's a thing you want, I don't know if you ever played with Lego, but if there's a thing you want to build and you don't have the right piece for it, then you have to find two or three other pieces to like make up for that, you know, and work your way around it. And so just the act of doing that and playing with those things, it gets your brain working in a creative way, in a very contained creative way, but then and get your brain used to solving problems. But then always when I play with Lego, it makes me think, like, what is the story here for this thing that I'm building? You know, where did this, you know, little Lego guy who I'm sticking into the space shuttle, like, what is driving him to like fly the space shuttle? Where is he going to go when he, you know, what's he trying to accomplish with this? And that starts generating ideas in my head. And inevitably, whether it directly turns into a story or it gets my brain used to coming up with stories, it's beneficial to my creativity. So that's just one aspect of play. But what do you guys think about play as being a way to cultivate creativity, and how do you guys play if that's something you do?
It's huge. And I think one of the obstacles to play, like you're talking about, happens once you decide to become a pro. Because like you said, there's no immediate obvious payoff to it. And hey, couldn't you be making money over here doing this other thing? Sometimes you actually have to turn down jobs to have the ability to play. And that's a really weird thing to do. It's a hard thing to do. And everybody's not in a place to even do that. So I'm not judging you guys if you say, hey, but I'd love to play, but I need to, you know, pay my bills this month. But it's hard as a pro to have that block of time and to have it not lead to a direct, here's what I'm going to get better at. You know, like drawing 100 hands has an immediate payoff. Play, like you're talking about, doesn't. And it's really strange, but I like it. I tend to play more, not necessarily with story like you're talking about, but I tend to play more with media. Like I started doing those big textured paintings and stuff a couple months ago. Just had a great time with them, and I had no idea where I was going with that, or whether I would even like it, or if I'd be good at it, or if anybody else would like it. It was just like, hey, I'm going to try this thing out, and it hugely beneficial, and it actually changed how I approached this next round of digital images that I made and the marks that were being made, and it showed up almost immediately, but I didn't know that it was going to show up in that way. And then now that I'm done with that book, I'm going back, because that's where I started to have a lot of fun, and I still don't know where that's going to lead.
That's a really good point too. Like play,
that's cool.
You could play with your art supplies too. Like being a professional for so long, I look at my art supplies, it's like tools to get a job done, right? It's very, very straightforward. Whereas I used to see these things as like, this is, you know, this is another toy that I have at my disposal. I got Lego over here. I've got He-Man over there. I've got what are they called? Lincoln Logs? Is that what it was? You know, and I have Crayola markers and a stack of paper, right? And all of these are just things to play with. But I actually got into this space And I want to hear from you, Will, just a second, but I got in this space this last year where I couldn't even like enjoy my sketchbook because I was thinking, why am I drawing something in my sketchbook that isn't for anything? I should be spending this time like working on this thing that needs to be published, or this thing that needs to be for SVS, you know, or whatever. And subsequently, like I have felt this year, because I haven't allowed myself to do that this year, and there's other extenuating circumstances, you know, the death of my mom, moving to Arizona, like there's been all these like other things that have thrown me off, where I haven't allowed myself to, you know, enjoy myself. And when I've come to where it's time to create, even for like client work or anything specific, there's been a lot of like, I'm just going through the motions here, and I'm relying on more like not pure creativity, but like all of these crutches that I use to make it look like I'm creative. So instead of me coming up with an idea, you know, like magically in my brain, where I'm putting like two dots together that haven't been put together before, I'm just going to Pinterest and being like, that guy, smash them together. That's an idea, you know?
Right.
And I realized that when I have those purely like creative things where I'm thinking of something that I know no one's ever thought of before, it usually is a result of me having spent plenty of time like playing, you know, messing around and like just letting things happen. So what about you, Will?
Well, we've had kind of similar experiences this year. You know, you lost your mom, I lost my wife. And so I was looking for I was dating for a while, and maybe this is a good time to announce that I've actually just gotten remarried just a few weeks ago.
Yay!
And
we've known about
which
this,
which happened much faster than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happened way faster than I ever thought it would. But in that space, you know, I had completely lost any desire to be creative. You know, and right after my wife died, I've never had a time in my life where I just didn't have any desire to draw. I didn't have any desire to do anything art wise for months. Mm-hmm. And then when I, you know, started dating this woman that I'm now married to, her name is Lily. It all of a sudden everything started really coming back hard, as far as, you know, wanting to create again, wanting to be creative. And so I decided, because I had been kind of taking some time off of doing other projects and really putting things on hold, I really decided to really put my full effort into Inktober to kind of get my feet back into the creative world again. And so I came up with a project, and it was to draw, as many Halloween type characters as I could. And I tried to come up with 31, and I just absolutely couldn't. I mean, there's the iconic, you know, ghost, there's the, you know, the Frankenstein character type character. There's, you know, a skeleton character. I mean, there's only so many iconic Halloween characters. And so I came, you know, I got to about 23 or four, and a couple of them were really stretches. And then I thought, I'm just not going to make 31. There's just no way. What do I do? And Lee, you talked about, you know, constraints. You guys both talked about constraints and limits and stuff. And so the 31 was kind of the opposite of a limit. It was stretching me, but in the same way, I needed that rule was, you know, you got to have 31. I really wanted them to all be cohesive. So I started thinking, like, what do I do to fill in the last 7 days that I was missing? And I started thinking, well, Christmas is right around the corner. Maybe I do kind of a mashup between Halloween and Christmas. I love Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's, you know, thing. But I didn't want to do his character. So I thought, you know, well, maybe there's another story in there where these these Christmas characters are pissed off and evil and doing evil things. And if you want to see the characters I did, you can go to my Instagram.
It's good. It's really good. Little,
it's impressive.
Little plug.
Good enough but to get cool thing that came spotlighted from this, on Inktober.
Thank you, Jake.
I didn't get spotlighted on Inktober, by the way.
Yeah, you got to post. You have to actually post some Inktober drawings, Lee.
I did one. I posted it. You'll see where it is. It's out there. I just can't talk about it yet.
Hey, but to finish this, just to wrap this one up, I'm actually going to make a game with those Wicked Christmas characters, and launch it on Kickstarter next year. And I've been working just in my spare time. I created a Google Doc and been dumping all these ideas for mechanics of the game.
Are you trying to sell the game, or are you trying to build it yourself?
No. I'm gonna launch it on Kickstarter.
So you're gonna do the whole thing. Okay.
I'm gonna do the whole thing. But I guess the reason why I brought that up for this podcast is that when I set out to do Inktober, I didn't set out to make a game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of creativity comes from being in motion and doing things. And so staring at that blank page is never the way to solve a creative problem. It just never is. Working on a project, starting something, drawing, but doing something often can lead to other things. And this came out of nowhere. And now I'm really excited about playing with this game, because I think it could be really fun, and I think I can do really well with it. So, you and Jake, you talked about, the whole idea of play, and does it fit in? And, I should be working on this thing for publishing. I should be working on this thing that is going to make money. Well, if the game does really well, then the play led to making money through creativity. Right.
Yeah. 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 And I think for me moving forward, I sort of have forgotten that my drawings books were just me. I didn't set out to make drawings books. I set out to fill sketchbooks for fun. And then those sketchbooks, I realized was sort of this untapped potential to be actual books that I could sell. And so scanning them, turning them into books, printing those, and selling them, I've been able to make a good little side hustle from that thing. And so I just need to remind myself, I may feel like I'm wasting time, but playing and messing around, but there is, you're right. As long as you're creating something, or you're allowing your brain to think that creatively, it's going to eventually filter down into something else.
Okay, we should acknowledge, before we move forward there, you got to acknowledge, for those of you guys who are listening, there's a theme that's going on here that is the sort of a pro tip, and that is, don't just stop with the thing that you're making. And that, I mean, that's one thing that I've noticed over and over, is that pros tend to start one thing, they say, oh wait, I can do this with it, and then they do something totally different, just like Will was just saying. But I just want to highlight that jump, because a lot of people probably have stuff that they've got to a certain point, and just one more step further, it becomes a product, or it becomes a design that goes on something, or it becomes, something different. Like, for example, I had to make a pattern for a bed that's in my last book features a bed very prominently, and I needed to make a pattern for it. I made a pattern for it, and now I presented the pattern to my agent. She's like, this is great. Now they're going to try to sell the pattern as a real bedspread pattern.
Was that pattern that you pulled off of Crate and Barrel?
Yeah. Hey, tweaking it just slightly, my friend. Yeah, it was a rug from Crate and Barrel that I saw that was this triangular pattern, and I wanted mine to be butterflies. And so I just made the triangles into butterflies, changed the design up, and now it's a completely new pattern. But it's just making the leap to hey, I see that rug. I'm going to make it to a bedspread. I'm going to change it this way. I'm going to do that with it. And then now it's something totally different.
No, that's really, That's really cool. Okay, another aspect, going back to that creative spiral. So we talked about play, but there's also sharing, right? That's one of those things there. And here's what I found. Sharing, there's one thing to like share the thing you've created, and that's kind of cool. It's like to put this thing out into the world and see what people think of it. And what happens there is you get the feedback from others of how that thing you made impacted them. And that either comes, that feedback is either like direct critique, like here's how you could make it better, or direct critique of here's why I like this thing so much. And through that interaction or that exchange, you begin to learn a little bit more about how to make your next thing impact people as well. So I think what's going on there is by keeping something that you've created to yourself, you don't get the aspect, you don't get the benefit of seeing what another brain, another person's creativity can do with that thing that you've created and make it better or inspire future things. So I think share is a huge thing. And there's another aspect of share that I think is important, and that's collaboration. So working with someone else is such a huge way to cultivate creativity, because you're constantly being exposed to that person's ideas that have come from experiences that you haven't had. And so now you're being hit with new experiences via their brain and what they're sharing with you. And that's going to spark things in your mind about how you can make things different and improve things or work on something. And then you're going to do it to them, and then they're going to do it back to you. And it's like this feedback loop that I think sparks a lot of great ideas. And one thing I want to point out specifically is collaborating with Aaron Painter on Art Drop Club. And so he came to me, he was just working as my assistant, and he said, "Hey, you've got all this extra art just laying around. Why don't you go on, start a Patreon and have it be like a print club or a sticker club or something like that. And every month people can just get, a sticker or a print or something. And that's how they could support you. And that's how you can use art that you haven't used before." And he threw that out there, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's a really cool idea." And I'm like, I started thinking about it. I was like, "Well, if it's good enough for me, why wouldn't it be good enough for another artist?" And I kind of threw that out there, and he was like, "Well, yeah, there's all these other artists that we follow and we want to work with. What if we expanded this idea and we had like a club, a subscription thing where people could get these stickers and these prints and artwork from these other artists who have artwork just sitting on their Instagram feed and nothing's, they're not doing anything with it." And so one thing led to another, and then we had Art Drop Club going along, and I think we're in the middle of our 11th month of doing it, or maybe our 12th month. We started last December, and in that time we've been able to work with 12 or so of our favorite artists, emailing them, striking up a relationship with them, also paying them, like selling their stuff and making some money and actually giving back to these artists that we've appreciated so much. They actually have made money through this as well. We've made some money on the side of it. And it all just came from being open to collaborating with someone and working with someone on it. And Aaron and I just decided, and I said to him, "Let's do this together. We'll split everything 50-50. And I will use my, I'll leverage my presence online. You'll leverage the extra time that you have, and we'll work together to make this thing." Well, another thing, a little side note, the idea was all set up to like make it as easy on artists as possible. So you could just contact them and say, "You've got these five pieces that are just sitting there. You haven't made a print with them. You haven't made a sticker or a t-shirt or anything with them. just send us the scans and we'll make that for you. And every time we've approached these artists about that, like, I don't know, I think everyone has said, well, I want to make something new and I want to take, you know, time out of my day to actually craft something new for this. And so that has been really interesting too. It's like, so now because we've wanted to collaborate on a thing and approach these other artists, like they're also wanting to, it's inspired them to like create something new as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did they do that or did they end up using the original thing that you contacted them for?
No, they've all made something new. I mean, there's been some old stuff, but most of it has been new, brand new stuff. So even That's myself cool. too, like I was like, well, I want to make something new too. You know, I was one of the artists. So yeah. What about you guys? How has sharing or collaborating helped your creativity?
I think when you,
well, do you want to go?
Okay. No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Lee.
We're so nice here. Look at that. I'll hold the door for you while you hold the door for me.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking about the project that I did for my fan art characters. If anyone has, you know, that's listening has followed those, where I take a known IP and add a creative twist to it, and kind of following along in that vein with the evil Christmas characters that I just made. You know, I shared them with my new wife, and she gave me, out of the seven characters I created, she gave me better ideas than what I had just from sharing them. And that's something that I've really had to learn as an artist is, you know, you want to, I think the narcissist in us wants to take credit for like, look what I did. You know, age as an artist, we create something, we show our mom, show our dad, we show our friends, and we get credit for doing this thing. If you look at the studio model of people that work for, you know, in the movie industry, people that work at Disney, Pixar, people that work in the game industry, rarely is the end product one person's vision. I mean, it never is, right? True. It's always a collaboration. And so if you can get to a point where you're confident enough in your own creations and knowing that your art is going to be better if you share it and if you get input from other people and give them credit, I really feel that's a big part of it too. You know, is when I was doing those fan art characters, I always credited people that gave me ideas. In fact, I sent a lot of people to dinner, you know, gave them a gift certificate because I encouraged that creativity coming in from other people. Cause there's no way you can compete with the hive mind, you know? And as soon as you learn that as an artist, I think it makes you better because you can really draw on other people's help. So, you know, one of the ideas specifically for the Christmas characters was I was going to give the elf a knife. And, you know, my wife said, what if he's sharpening a candy cane? And as soon as I saw that visual in my mind, I'm like, that's so much funnier. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just so much better. It's so much more appropriate to what he would maybe do. So yeah, I really believe when you put that on your list of, you know, sharing, I think that's a huge part of creativity. That thinking that you can do it all yourself is kind of a fallacy.
I should add to that goes a long way in professional relationships as well. I don't know about you guys, but earlier in my career, and when I say that earlier, I mean like up until like last year, I would be nervous to ask for feedback from an art director saying like, I don't know which color is good on this. What do you think? Here, and then I give them like three colors to choose from. You know what I mean? I would always think that I'm the illustrator and I don't want them to think I can't do it or right. something. You know what I mean? But I started asking for feedback like, hey, which storytelling pose is better for this scene? What do you guys think? And I just send them a bunch of stuff, just go back and forth and just say, hey, knock yourself out. There's no wrong answer. And just getting rid of that insecurity. Like they're going to think that I'm weak for not making the perfect decision. And man, it changed everything in terms of my working relationships.
That's so cool. I kind of did the same thing too. We're working on this Inktober book me and my publisher, the Inktober Handbook, which comes out next year. And I said, now, you know, we got to figure out a cover. And I told her just point blank, like, I know you have a marketing team that's going to weigh in on a cover. You yourself have, you know, as an editor, know what's good for a cover, and the art director too. Like, this is your business. So before I even do anything, why don't you just send me like 5 covers that you think look really cool, that you want this to like live in that same world. And that was sort of me, like, in the past I would have been like, oh, cover, I know exactly what I want this book to look like.
Right.
It has to look like this. But I also know now too, like, people do judge books by their cover, and usually what I want isn't necessarily what sells a book. For example, like Little Bot and Sparrow, I said, like, what do you want to do for the cover? And I said, I want to do a blueprint of the robot as, you know, as like a mechanical drawing, you know, a cutaway showing his inside. And they're like, okay, that's great. How about that's under the slip cover
where no one can see it. Okay. Right.
And so the marketing team actually picked what would be on the slip cover. And, you know, it's something much more approachable for people. But if you pull it off, then you can see what I created, which is this cool, like, blueprint cutaway thing.
Yeah.
I agree. That's a good way to look at it is people have ideas, throw it out there. You know, people are usually pretty honored when you do take their advice, especially if they've been asked. I have a friend who's like, don't ask me for any more advice. I'm like, why? Why not? Like, you never do what I say, ever. I'm like, well, I still want to hear what you have to say. He's like,
here's dumb idea. I still want to hear you.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
What I realized is I just needed validation from him.
Just give me a pat on the back.
Yeah.
Well, I should add.
Just tell him you want to know. I was going to say, tell him you want his opinion, because you always want to know that you're on the right track by not doing what he wants you to do.
Exactly. Yeah. If your idea is what he says, then it's horrible. But one idea that goes along with sharing, you guys are talking about, you know, getting motivation from people and kind of the green light to go forward. I should add that just being around people and seeing what they're doing, like, I know that being around you guys, I would never have a YouTube channel. Not that my YouTube channel is anything close to what you guys have yet, but I would never have done that if I was given permission in a way by being friends with you guys and then seeing what you're doing and saying, well, God, they're doing it. Why can't I do it? And there's a certain mm-hmm. freedom that comes when you start looking at people around you and sharing their ideas and saying, hey, I can do that too. And not just being your own little vacuum, like you have to create your, you know, entire business and your entire portfolio and everything by yourself, but just giving yourself the freedom to look at somebody else and say, hey, that worked for them. And I'm just going to give it a try. And that's a kind of a form of sharing, I guess, too.
Well, you just brought up something a point that I want to make that I didn't even think to make, you know, as I was preparing for this, as I spent 2 or 3 minutes preparing for this entire podcast episode.
Shh, don't let people in on the magic.
Right. No, and that is, I think this is key to this as well. That is, surround yourself with creative people. If you are, whether or not you live, you know, close to them, or you are communicating, with them frequently throughout the day or the week, you need to have creative people in your life, because that is going to, just like you said, you're going to see something they're doing that's going to spark something in you. And then you're going to do something that's going to inspire them. And it's just going to go back and forth. So look around. If you don't have creative people in your life, find some new friends, dump those people.
Well, go to, we have there's a forum at svslearn.com who sponsors this very podcast. And if you go to the forum, there's a lot of people on there and they're really supportive and you can see what they're doing, and they're all starting projects and they're all getting signed by agents, and they, you know, everybody's in different phases of their career, but they share freely no matter what stage of their career they're in, which is pretty cool.
Cool. All right. The last thing I want to talk about here, is reflection. And I think that is another key to sparking creativity. And the way that I interpret that is looking at what has been created, either by yourself or by other people, and breaking them down into why they work and what worked good about them, what didn't. And there's three things I want to talk about here. One is look at past projects that you've done that were successful, or look at past projects you've done that were failures, and just reflect on, think about, unpack what it was that made that a success or made that a failure. Look at where you could have improved. Look at what was most enjoyable about it. Look at where you were most engaged during the process. You know, was it at the beginning? Was it at the end? Was it during the sharing of it? You know, was it, you know, why was maybe the middle section so hard to do and it took you so much longer to do that than, you know, starting it or finishing it? All those kind of questions you ask yourself are going to, percolate up there in your head and make you think about other projects and how you want to apply what you've learned to other projects. So that's one. The other thing is reflect on what other people have created as well. And so one thing I like to do is not passively watch a film, but to actually watch a film with an eye towards story, with an eye towards craft. Like I was watching Men in Black last night, and Men in Black came out at a time where special effects was transitioning from practical to CG, and how much practical stuff are we going to do versus how much computer stuff are we going to do. And one thing I was looking at was like, what did they do here? Why did they do practical effects here? What was the technology they had that made them do a CG effect there? How are they going about it? And just thinking about like the visual effects side of it was a deeper way to enjoy that film than just the storytelling. However, once I didn't get through the whole movie, I only got through like the first 20 minutes of it before it was bedtime for me. And when I went to bed, I found online the screenplay for Men in Black. And I just read through the screenplay and looked at, well, how did the writer of this film, what was his vision versus what actually went on the screen? And it was interesting to see subtle changes in dialogue that I remembered, how he described how a scene should be set up versus how the director actually ended up envisioning it himself. And that was just another, great way to enjoy the film. But what that does for me is when I go to sit down to make something, I'm not making a film per se, but all those things are in my head, and it might inspire something for me down the line, whether it's a story I want to write, whether it's a character I want to add to it that's based off of something here, or whether it's a way I want to describe a scene based off what I learned from reading the screenplay. So I would do that. That would be like reflecting, unpacking, and looking at the media that you consume. You could do that with video games. You could do that with books. You could do it with comics. You could do it with just going to a museum, and instead of staring at a painting, oh, that's really nice, I saw a Rembrandt. Like, get in close and like, which layer of paint was put on here first? What colors were put on here first? You know, doing all those things kind of helps you cultivate creativity in yourself. What about you guys? How do you reflect, and how does that, is this something you do, and how do you do it?
It's a good question. I need to reflect on that.
Well, I often, when I'm looking for something, like let's say if I have a project that I'm working on, if it's a client project or if it's a personal project, I kind of have my parameters. I kind of have the problem already set up. You know, if it's a story you're going to illustrate, the problems are there. But if I'm wanting to create something from nothing, often I will look at either an experience that I can reflect on or I'll look at a known story idea that I can riff on. And a couple of examples that kind of come to mind are images that I've done. And if you want to see them, you can go to willterry.com. But basically, I'll take a story like, for instance, Hansel and Gretel, and I'll just try to imagine, like, what if the story didn't go the direction that we all know? What if it went off into a different direction, you know? And so the idea of a fractured fairy tale. So the Hansel and Gretel one I did was, you know, what if the kids, I mean, why do we assume that the kids are good? What if the kids are evil and the witch is good? Or what if the kids are just more evil than the witch? You know, and so I have these kids I think it's the first illustration on my website that pops up. And it's, you know, it's obvious that the kids have already killed the witch and taken over the candy house. Because what would be better, right? That's what they want. And so I remember when I had that idea, it was just thinking of the, you know, love. I was actually looking at someone else's Hansel and Gretel piece and just falling in love with it. But they did it in a more traditional way. And I thought, I want to capture sort of some of the same magical feel of this amazing house and all the candy and everything. But I want to do something that people haven't seen before that might be a little bit disturbing and shocking. And
yeah.
And so then that, you know, that idea just kind of comes. Another idea that comes to mind is the idea of, you know, I wanted to do a Christmas card a few years ago, and I wanted to do something with Santa. And I've done a lot of Christmas cards over the years, but it's like, what can I add that's new to the story? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to put myself in Santa's shoes. But what does he do? He's flying through the air with the sled. He's delivering presents. He lands on top of a roof, and there's snow on top of the roof. And all of a sudden the idea hit me as I'm trying to put myself in his shoes and I'm trying to be Santa. And thinking, wait a minute, if I get off this sled on this roof that's got snow on it, there's no way you can walk on a roof with snow, right?
Right.
You just can't, there's no way. You'd slip right off. So I was like, okay, so that's the illustration. I want Santa to slip off the roof. And then to take it further, I thought, well, what if this little town that he's delivering in is on a hill, and so there's a lot of roof lines kind of all lined up, and then all of a sudden I visualized the illustration before I ever did it, which was him bouncing from roof to roof to roof to roof, going down and ending up face first, face planting in the snow with presents laying around in his, you know, his bag and everything. And that one really went over really well with people because they hadn't really seen that before, at least I hadn't seen it, and I'm pretty sure most of them hadn't seen anything like that. So I think that often you can put yourself in a creative place by visualizing and by visiting known IPs and known stories and just asking yourself questions. Why does it have to be this way? Could it be different? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that even answers your question or not.
No, it does. I like that. It goes back to that Chris Van Allsburg trick where take two objects that shouldn't ever be put together and put them together, or take an object which has a known location or known environment that it's a part of and stick it in something completely opposite, change its size, put it somewhere else, things like that. And that's just a way to look at something, reflect on it. How could it be done differently? How could you turn it on its head? You know, how could it be done better? And I think that goes back to solving your own problems as well. Like that's sort of that cycle there. All right. Is there any other, hold on. Lee's trying to talk, but I can't hear him.
He's probably muted himself and forgot.
I clicked up. There's a button on my headset that I've never seen before. That is, it's this auxiliary mute button.
Well, man, you might as well click it then and see what happens.
I was saying some great, great points during that whole thing, and you guys didn't hear any of them.
Only your cat will know.
No, when you asked if we had any thoughts on how we reflect. I said, I need to reflect on that, which was a nice, poignant little joke, and nobody laughed. And I'm like, all right. I was muted, I think. but one thing I want to add.
We heard it. It just wasn't funny.
No, oh, well, yeah. That's half of it. adding to what Will's saying is taking a 1,000-foot view. Like, I love what he's saying about kind of rephrasing the question, almost reframing the question and reframing the problem to get creative. A lot of illustrators are very, I don't know what the right word would be. They work within a vacuum almost, where illustrators are looking at other illustrators on Instagram, and then they're following that style, and all of a sudden the whole thing becomes very circular. And so what I want to suggest is on reflection is looking at things from like the 1,000-foot view instead of the 1-inch view, basically backing up and saying, who else is creative and what other things can I look at? I have the benefit of doing some of these art shows that are painting is the minority. There's everybody else. There's woodworkers and there's steel sculptors and there's all this other stuff. And so I make it a point. I had an assistant this past show, which was awesome. And I spent like 2 or 3 hours just wandering through the fair and looking at anything other than two-dimensional artwork, no paintings, no anything like that. Just looking at sculptural stuff and all the other stuff, jewelry and all this stuff. And I've really taken notes on how they're using design differently than illustrators are, how they're using shape, how they're using materials. And it really does change how you come back to it. I thought to myself, how can I bring some of these, you know, beautiful wooden sculptures, what they're doing into my work. And one thing that the wood sculptors had to focus on is really strong silhouette. And we talk about silhouette a lot in illustration, but these guys only have silhouette. There's no painted details on there. So their silhouette has to be perfect. And so I started looking at some of the shapes they're using, and they're different than the shapes I use. And I just thought, how can I bring that in? And so that's one way of kind of backing up and looking not just at what other illustrators are doing, but just what are other creative people doing, like Jake was saying, with the film, and how can I integrate that in? And it was hugely beneficial. But one of the other things I did is looked at how people are selling work. And so once I looked at the whole fair as a whole, that people are selling their work there. There's no commission made. It's a really good business model. They don't have to give out a commission, but you're a victim, or you're at mercy of the weather and all these other constraints, I guess. And so I started thinking, is there a better way? And selling your paintings in galleries is horrible. And so then I had the thought, like, okay, I've got these physical paintings. I don't want to sell them in a gallery.
What's horrible about gallery is because of the commission?
Oh, everything is bad about it. The gallery model is the worst. That's a whole another topic. But yeah, the commission, paying to ship them there, having them tied up there for a certain amount of time. Sometimes they even just keep them in the back and they won't send them back, you know, just in case somebody asks if you have them there. It's a horrible business model. But the fair solves that with you keep all the commission, you show exactly what you want to show, but there's only so many shows a year. It could be rained out. There's so many problems. And so I backed up and saw that, okay, the gallery system sucks and the art fair model is good, but it's limited. And so is there another way to sell physical artwork? And I started thinking about interior designers and architects who lease buildings and have all these corporate rentals. And so that became where I started thinking about, okay, that's where these paintings need to go, is corporate rentals, where they're paying a rental fee for the artwork and you never actually sell the piece. And so then I started contacting some interior designers locally here, and actually have hooked up with a couple that are showing my work to corporate clients, and I have no competition. Right. Well, now I do, because I just told everybody. So forget that. But it's cool. But it came from like, okay, this there's an opportunity here, but it's problematic, and there's another opportunity over here, but it's problematic. Is there a third option that's not there yet? Yeah. And you solve it.
Yeah. That is interesting. What if you could rent out your artwork to, you know, to someone who, yeah, you just blew my mind there, Lee. Sorry.
Sorry.
I can't even like finish the thought.
It's amazing. Well, it's not a hypothetical. It is how there's a whole business model that works that way.
Yeah. Cause so, I know there are people who, like, I had a guy who was trying to sell a house, a friend of mine, and he actually rented furniture.
Right. Staging.
So that the house, yeah, so it was staged. And I was like, well, why not? You're right. Why not have a art, throw your art in there as well?
Yeah.
That's really cool. All right. So I think that's it for this episode, you guys.
A lot of really
good insights. Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit more stuff. Creative. I'll take us out. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
All right. Yep. Thank you for joining us, everybody. This is 3-Point Perspective, and it is made possible by svslearn.com. We're becoming a great illustrator starts. Go check out svslearn.com if you want to sign up for a 7-day free trial. Is that what we got going on right now?
7-day free trial. Yep.
Yeah. And take a couple courses, see if it's for you. And we've had just so much good feedback from people who love the courses. They love learning from us and the other teachers that we've gotten together. So check that out.
Who've gotten work from and become illustrators from SVS?
Yeah, we have a handful of students too that have gone through our courses. The way that they're designed is there's a fundamental phase, there's more specific like specific courses on a little bit more narrow subject matter. So you might learn how to draw basic shapes here, but then we're going to show you how to put those shapes into a beautiful like composition and turn those shapes into an actual illustration, right? And so we've had students who've gone through that and end up getting work as working illustrators, book covers, children's book deals, things like that. We also have business classes on how to do a portfolio, how to do how to sell your artwork online, how to connect with agents, things like that. So yeah, svslearn.com, check that out. Your hosts have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found at willterry.com and also on Instagram at willterryart. That's his Instagram handle. Lee White is on Instagram. It's at Lee White Illo. You can go to his website. It's leewhiteillustration.com. And he may have mentioned it once or twice, but he has a YouTube channel now. So check that out and see what he's posting over there. And I'm Jake Parker. My website is mrjakeparker.com. And you can find me on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's Sugg with 2 G's. And you can find his work at alexsugg.com. Podcast produced by Tanner Garlick. And you can find his work at tannergarlickart.com as well. All right. If you like this episode, share it around. Subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already so you can get notified whenever a new episode drops. They're coming out about every 2 weeks. We've been very consistent with that over the last, 8 or 9 months. And so much so that it's not even a thing that, hey, we did it again. We put out a podcast every 2 weeks. But I'm proud of us for being able to do that. We've put together a nice team that gets this all done. One other cool thing about these podcasts is we also have a forum thread associated with each episode. So if you go on the svslearn.com forums, free to join, become a member over there, you can actually join in this conversation. Each episode has its own thread where you can talk about it. If there's a way that you are creative or you cultivate creativity that we didn't talk about here, we'd love to know what you think there. So chime in over there and let us know your thoughts. That's it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, and see you next time.